Well, I'm going to call the Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform, Finance and Policy Division to order. And first thing to do is to share with the public that this meeting is being held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which allows the legislature to be able to conduct official business via remote conferencing capacities. You can view that 10.01 at the Minnesota House website. Members who are interested in testifying in committee, in our committee at any rate, can contact our committee administrator, Jamel Lundy, at house.mn. Jamel, J-A-M-A-E-L dot Lundy, L-U-N-D-Y, at house.mn. If you go to our webpage, committee webpage, at the Minnesota House website, you'll see instructions for that. This hearing is being live streamed on our Minnesota House website. It's also a live stream on Facebook Live and on YouTube. And you can find the links for those at the Minnesota House website under this committee's page. All right, very well. With that, we're going to begin our meeting by having a quorum call. And so I'm going to ask the clerk to take the roll.
Mariani.
Present.
Edelson.
Present.
Johnson.
Present.
Christensen.
Present.
Considine.
Present.
Dean.
Present.
Howard.
Present.
Blesch.
Present.
Long.
Present.
Lucero.
Present.
Miller. Miller. Moeller.
Present.
Nash.
Present.
Novotny.
Present.
O'Neill.
Present.
Pinto. Pinto. Poston.
Present.
Miller.
Present.
And Pinto, I believe, is an HHS. We have quorum.
Very well. Quorum is established. Members, before we dive into the work, let me just share that this most likely will be the last committee hearing of this committee before we go signing by in a little bit over a week. We'll see what happens after that. But at least in our regular session, I don't anticipate us being called back together into committee. I won't take all the time that's really warranted and necessary to express my appreciation for the privilege of chairing this committee, which really means the privilege of being an important caretaker of public safety in our state of Minnesota. And it also means the privilege of working with each and every one of the committee members here. On both sides of the aisle. I was going to call everyone's name, but that will take up our entire committee process. I do want to acknowledge the collegiality of my Minority Caucus lead, Representative Brian Johnson. Been a good colleague to work with. We don't agree on a lot of things, but there are plenty of things that we do agree on, and I certainly have appreciated your advice at critical moments in time, Representative Johnson. It's a very talented group of legislators that we have here on this committee. We have a number of chairs that serve on the committee, and so there's an incredible level of expertise that this committee represents, as well as a lot of newcomers to the legislature, and so there's an incredible level of fresh eyes that have been present with us throughout. And I, again, just want to express my personal satisfaction and appreciation for working with each and every one of you. This committee, I'm hoping, members, we will be done by our allotted time. We're looks like we can go right up to 2:30. If we don't, however, we did secure the ability to meet again at 6:30 this evening. I am hoping that we can avoid that. But just know that is available to us. With that, members, we do need a motion for adoption of the April 30th minutes.
So move, Chair.
Very well. Representative Adelson, our Vice Chair, moves adoption of the minutes of April 30th. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very well. Motion prevails, and the minutes of April 30th are adopted. All right. So, members, today we have two bills. House File 2711, which will be amended. The delete all amendment, and then House File 4540. Let me just preface quickly my thinking behind these two bills. They're pretty significant bills because they speak to, I believe, the core functions, many of the core functions of our public safety and corrections work and institutions in our state. I had this conversation with Representative Johnson yesterday, and like I said, there are things we don't agree on plenty, but there's certainly core things that we do. And I think we both agree that public safety is just a vital core function of government, both at the state and at the federal level. And it really deserves our constant diligence to make sure that we have strong institutions that carry out public safety and corrections expectations that are our utmost responsibility in the state. That's being really seriously challenged right now because of the COVID pandemic threat, which has had a deleterious impact on our state economy. And so part of what we would typically be doing actually a little bit earlier from this time of year is that we would have a target based on a budget resolution in the House to be able to meet those responsibilities. We don't have that, members. And so I'm owning that up front, but nonetheless, I think it's critically important as we do our last hearing here that this committee speak to the process as it plays out between now and signing die, and most likely beyond that into a potentially special session about how we can meet or what it is that we need to meet in terms of that core function of government. And obviously the difficult thing will be to figure out of how to meet that. Members, I'm seeing people frozen. Can people hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very well. This happens occasionally here, so I just want to make sure. So that's my approach here today. I look forward to the conversation and to the debate. I'm hoping that we can split equal time between now and 2:30 between both of these bills. So please know that one of the things I've done with these bills, and it was painful, was to exclude a number of things that I really want to see happen, and one might even argue are needed to happen. Both departments brought those to us. For instance, there's OLA-related studies or recommendations on safety in our prisons. The filter that I've used with these bills is to really try to discern as best as I can what's both doable, where there's good consensus, good policy that just needs to be done, and what must be done given the constraints, even given the constraints of the budget because of COVID. So that's really kind of my big, broad filter with both the bills before us. So with that, members, I'm going to remove the first of these bills. The chair moves House File 2711 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, I'm going to move an amendment to this. This is a delete all amendment. It's the A20-0767 amendment. Members, many of you may recall House File 2711. It was our omnibus bill last year, and that bill contained both House Files 8 and 9, which the chair did support. However, just a little bit controversial. And so when we posted the bill initially, I received a frenzied series of calls and emails. We will not be taking up gun-related issues in House File 2711 with the lead-all amendments. So I just wanted to make sure that's out there on the record. So with that, members, House File 2711, I've moved that amendment. We're going to debate the amendment and also take up amendments to the amendments, and then we'll vote on it, and then we'll vote on the final version of House File 2711. I'm going to begin by asking our House staff to walk us through the 820-0767 amendment. And I don't know whether that's you, Mr. Diebel, or you, Mr. Johnson, to begin us, or perhaps Mr. Walsh, but I'll let you sort that out.
Mr. Chair, this is John Walsh from House Fiscal Staff. I'll be walking through Article 1 and then turning things over to Ben Johnson.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Mr. Chair, beginning on line 1.14 of the Delete All Amendment, the Department of Corrections is receiving a total of $5.75 million in this bill in Subdivision 1. In Subdivision 2, there is a reduction to the Department of Corrections Institutions area due to savings primarily from two areas. One was a governor's provision, which they titled Investments in Community Supervision, and was supposed to spend more money in the community and save some bed impact to the institutions. And the second was from House File 2013, a Representative Dean bill that was modifying the criminal thresholds for marijuana. The total savings is $2.545 million, and that is realized in fiscal 2021. Mr. Chair, then moving down to Section 3, Community Services, there are some investments from the governor's proposed budget, adding $3.9 million to the CCA counties in fiscal 2021, $310,000 to the CPO counties. There is a provision on line 2.14 to give the department additional money, $205,000 in 2020 and $430,000 in 2021. They're now providing supervision in Meeker and Renville counties. And that supervision has started, but they need an appropriation to pay for the staff. Those expenditures will be offset by revenue that will come in as the counties are billed for it later. And Mr. Chair, that revenue line is absent from the spreadsheet currently and will be added in a future revision. On line 2.21, there is $422,000 for additional corrections offender supervision costs, and $2.6 million on line 2.26 to establish county and regional revocation intervention service centers for offenders. On line 2.32, $365,000 is added to fiscal year 2021 for cognitive behavioral treatment and community-based sex offender treatment, and as well as housing. Those were all governor's requests for the supplemental budget, which takes us down to line 3.5. There's $25,000 in the area of operations support. This is from House File 3976, which was the Felony Murder Task Force. Mr. Chair, on line 3.9, the deficiency request for sentencing guidelines of $8,000 in the current fiscal year and $36,000 in fiscal 2021 is also provided. And on line 3.10, Public Safety Bureau of Criminal Apprehension receives $4.775 million. Of which $3,100,000 is for sexual assault examination kits for storage and testing. On line 3.23, there's additional chemists for marijuana testing. This was part of House File 2013, the marijuana thresholds as well. That amount came from the fiscal note. And Mr. Chair, on line 4.1, there are laboratory capacity enhancements to the BCA of $1.386 million in 2021. That was also a governor's initiative. And Mr. Chair, that completes Article 1. I will turn it over to Ben Johnson.
Very well, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is Ben Johnson with House Research. I'm going to do a brief walkthrough through Article 2. Article 2 consists of three bills. It contains House File 4137. That was Representative Pinto's bill amending harassment crimes in response to a Supreme Court decision. It consists of House File 3070. That's Representative Pinto's bill increasing the penalties for sex trafficking and soliciting prostitution in a private place. Yes, private place. And it also has House File 3869. That's Representative Mueller's bill establishing a new computer theft offense for the unauthorized copying of data stored in a computer. A brief note on the harassment bill, that's House File 4137. There were a few amendments added in the Judiciary Committee. The language that is in this bill includes the changes that were made in the Judiciary Committee. Mr. Chair, that's the end of the walkthrough through Article 2. I'd ask you to recognize Mr. Diebel to walk through Article 3.
Very well, Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair, Article 3 contains seven bills that have been heard by the committee. The first is House File 1149, which is Representative Christensen's bill related to conservation officers and DWI. The second is House File 3772, which is the DOC's policy bill. That is also authored by Representative Christensen. One note on that, there's a provision that we've already enacted through the COVID package related to healthcare decisions for those who, inmates who don't have someone designated to make those. That's already been enacted, so that's not included in this version. The third bill in Article 3 is Representative Wolgamott's House File 3911, which creates penalties for using drones over DOC property and facilities. The fourth bill in Article 3 is House File 2983, which is Representative O'Neill's sexual assault examination kit bill. And also, I believe that was contained in the governor's proposal. The fifth bill is the eyewitness identification policy adoption requirement that Representative Pinto put forward in House File 627, and that relates to law enforcement adopting and the creation of a policy and then law enforcement agencies adopting the policy. The sixth bill in Article 3 is the Representative Edelson's House File 3678, which relates to Department of Public Safety accepting donations. And the final bill contained in Article 3 is the Aiding and Abetting Felony Murder Task Force, which is House File 3976 and was sponsored by Representative Dean. I'd ask you to recognize Mr. Johnson to go over Article 4, Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Diebel. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members, Ben Johnson again with House Research. Article 4 consists of two bills. The first is House File 2385. That's Representative Howard's bill revising the controlled substance schedules, consistent with recommendations from the Board of Pharmacy. The other bill is House File 2013. That's Representative Dean's bill establishing new thresholds for crimes involving the possession of marijuana. Under current law, possession of marijuana offenses can either be a petty misdemeanor or a felony, depending on the amount that an individual possesses. These sections establish misdemeanor and gross misdemeanor penalties. This is consistent with the amendment adopted in this committee earlier this session. Mr. Chair, that's the end of the walkthrough through the bill.
Very well, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the concise nature. The public is watching. You'll notice that there's reference to various House files, and all that is to say that for the most part, what we've done here in terms of putting on for us to debate and to vote on are provisions that, for the most part, we've seen before. We've heard testimony that we've had some debate on. There are some new provisions that are being forwarded through the departments. I think all the new ones, basically, the Department of Corrections, since we did not have a walkthrough of their budget supplemental requests in House Law 4540, which was the bill that had both the departments as well as the judiciary request before us. So, again, members, trying to hew, a pretty generally pretty close line to items that we have spent some time already hearing, in some cases having passed individually forward, and then so to package them together here in the form of this one bill. So with that, members, I do see a question from Chair Johnson, but I do want to make sure that we're not going to vote on this right now. We're going to vote on the amendments. I think that's correct. Well, you work from home and you forget your procedures, I think we're going to be voting on amendments to the amendment first, and then we'll take a vote on the overall amendment. So with that, Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, it's a question for Mr. Diebel. When we heard part of the DOC provisions, one of the issues that we had some issues with was the Fugitive Apprehension Unit Authority. I'm just wondering if that is still in this bill or has that been taken out?
Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I apologize that those provisions are not in this bill as well. I should have noted that in my overview. That's another piece that was not included. Thank you.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Representative Johnson, for that clarification. So with that, members, we're going to move to the amendments, and I just assume do them in numerical order. It seems to be the simplest thing to do. First up, we have the A6 amendment. I don't know who's offering that amendment. Maybe I'm offering it. Let me get, this might be a technical amendment. Let me see if my staff can help me out here. Okay, I'm not here, but I will offer the A6 amendment. It's language that came to us from the BCA. And it's a simple word change language. I think we do have the BCA here to explain it. If members want to have that explanation, we can have them speak to that. Well, it's awfully quiet. I want to make sure people can hear me. You can all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, very well. All right, well, then seeing no further discussion on the A6 amendment. The chair moves adoption of the A6 amendment. Okay, very well. I figured if I go slow enough, we'll let the technology catch up. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was waiting for either an explanation of the amendment or the BCA to speak to it. My question is, does this change the fiscal note? It looks like it would impact the fiscal.
Let me ask, let me first ask Mr. Walsh if he can shed some light on that, and then we'll see if someone from BCA or DPS is here. Mr. Walsh.
Mr. Chair, I apologize, I'm lost. Could you tell me what amendment to the amendment we're discussing?
The A6 amendment, it refers to page 4, line 1.
Page 4. Mr. Chair, no, this does not impact the cost of the provision.
And it looks like the amendment, so this was brought to me, members, so it looks like the simple amendment to delete the words, the phrase to increase staff, and to delete also the word enhancement in the paragraph title.
Mr. Chair, this was a request by the agency just to change the verbiage in the rider.
Very well. Representative O'Neill?
Yeah, that's what I was confused about, Mr. Chair, because it says to delete the language to increase staff. So are we increasing staff or are we not increasing staff? That's why I was confused whether or not it impacted the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, I believe the intent is to use the funding for other enhancements besides staff.
Representative O'Neill.
So, Chair, maybe the BCA should speak to this because it sounds like either they're not asking for additional FTEs, which is kind of what the language of the writer seems to be doing. Yeah. I'm just confused.
No, it's an appropriate question. I've just been notified that Mr. Director Evans is on the line from BCA. Yes. And someone else, there you are. Good to see you, Director. You heard the question, I suspect.
Yes, go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill. The request was designed so that we can maximize the use of this money in terms of increasing staff, in terms of what the money would be used for. One of the things that we've been talking about through in our original presentation is that the caseload due to crime and requests that are being requested of the BCA, in particular in our DNA laboratory, firearms laboratory, continues even in these really challenging times with COVID. I had a report just yesterday, our caseload continues to remain the same, if not increasing. And so one of the things we want to be cognizant of through this process is certainly we'll use it for additional staff if the budget will allow for that moving forward. But we want to be cognizant as you are all facing these really difficult, challenging times and looking at these budget times that we certainly do not want to increase staff just to face cuts going forward. So it would give us the greatest latitude to make sure that those turnaround times remain the same and that we're best addressing violent crime across Minnesota. All this money would be going to addressing that violent crime.
Very well. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Evans, can you let us know how many FTEs that this appropriation would increase, or does it not increase FTEs at all and it just maintains your staff but increases machine supplies, reconfiguration of rooms?
Superintendent Evans.
Representative O'Neill, that would be an evaluation that we'd certainly do in terms of the actual FTE. Right now, we'd be looking at where we're at for this, and some of that depends on what all of you decide in terms of contract settlements and other things moving forward in terms of what we can support, but it would be going towards ensuring we maintain the current staffing levels. One of the things that we're very concerned about going forward is we do have a number of contracts with other agencies and federal grants, and so we'd be really looking to ensure that we're consistently maintaining. If, as we go through this, we'd be able to add staff, we would certainly do that to bring those turnaround times. For example, our turnaround time in the DNA section remains at 63 days. We've consistently told you that 30 days is really the acceptable turnaround time. So we would, if staffing would allow, but I do not anticipate that based on what we're looking at from all the anticipated challenges to our budgets going forward that are not just that are besides things such as your legislative appropriations, federal grants, other things like that. So I don't mean to not have a specific answer for you, but so much depends on what's going to happen in some of these final days moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would point out, since we just had the fiscal analysis released by the governor's office and MMB yesterday, that even if we used every cent in our reserves, we're still $67 million short. And of course, Commissioner Franz has urged us not to use all of the budget reserves for that purpose. We do have some things that we could do, as in he had mentioned contracts. We have state employee contracts that could, the legislature could choose to not ratify, and that would free up a lot of capacity, a little more flexibility. So there are options, and I think that's what he's speaking to.
All right. I don't see any further questions. Thank you, Superintendent. Members, we're going to we'll take a roll on this. Actually, let me check with you, Representative Johnson. Do we need a roll on this from your perspective?
I believe we can do this by voice.
Okay, I think that's true on our side as well. Very well, then. All in favor of adoption of the A6 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All say aye. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Next, we have the A7 amendment. Is someone going to offer the A7 amendment?
Chair, this is Representative Navani. I'll offer it.
Very well. Representative Navani moves adoption of the A7 amendment to the A20-0767 amendment. Representative Navani.
Thank you, Chair. This is an amendment to the language of the Emergency Metropolitan Services Board bill. This bill simply adds Sherburne County in statute to the metropolitan area as defined in the 9/11 emergency communication system. The bill also updates terminology in statute to reflect the board's name, Metropolitan Emergency Services Board. The changes were part of the Department of Public Safety Emergency Communications Network initiative back in 2019. The provisions were included in the 2019 House-passed Public Safety Omnibus, but they were not part of the final public safety bill enacted into law. There was no opposition to this bill when it was heard last year, nor when I presented it in March. Thank you for consideration. I ask for your support.
Very well. Members, any questions? Not seeing questions, just allowing the technology to catch up here. Members, I do think this is a good amendment. We had a good hearing on this. Representative Ivey, I think, carried the history of it fairly well. And so I would encourage its adoption. Did I hear someone try to say something? Perhaps not. Okay. Very well. Representative Johnson, I think a roll call, or rather a voice vote, should suffice here.
I believe a voice vote would be fine.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Johnson. So all in favor of the Novotny motion to adopt the A7-11, or rather the A7 amendment to the A20 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Novotny. Next, we have the A8 amendment.
Chair Mariani, that would be my amendment.
Very well. Representative Johnson moves adoption of the A8 amendment to the A20 amendment. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, this is the A8 amendment deals with the Board of Pharmacy and Drug Scheduling Bill. This brings in the Senate language. I generally do not like the Senate language as much as I like our language, but talking with different people and information from Dr. Cody Weiberg, the Senate version as it leaves out the FDA-approved drug gabapentin, which our current language does have. If we keep that in, Minnesota would be the only one of only a few states to actually schedule it. I do have Dr. Weiberg. Should be here to answer any questions should you have. I do hope you support this amendment. I think it's one of the few times the Senate got something right.
There is a blue moon every once in a while. And members, so we did pass House File 2385 earlier. Representative Howard's bill, I believe, is sitting on the floor. This would give us certainly maximize the opportunity to be successful with the legislation. Representative Howard, is there anything that you wish to add?
Mr. Chair, no, I wouldn't add anything. I guess if for the members of the committee, if Dr. Weiberg is available to just weigh in on it, that might be advisable. But I think this does make sense.
Very well. So I hear Cody Weiberg is here. I wonder if we can pull him up. I don't think we need extensive description, but maybe just focus in on the Senate language provision. It might be as simple as a ditto to Representative Johnson's presentation. So Dr. Weiberg, is it?
Chair Mariani, I don't see him listed on the participants.
Right. And I'm getting a note that, he did not sign up to testify. It looks like he did send a message of support. Very well. Members, any further questions? All right. Representative Johnson's, perhaps another voice vote will suffice here on your side.
That would be fine on our side.
Very well, and same on this side. So with that, all in favor of the Johnson motion to adopt the A8 amendment to the A20 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Members, now we have the A9 amendment. I believe that's yours, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is. I'd like to just speak briefly to it, and then I will be withdrawing it. I've had a very nice conversation with Representative Pinto, and there's some concerns sort of in the field as to how to approach this, and so it may need a little bit more work. But in essence, this is my House File 3380, and what it does is it encourages the Post Board to develop and distribute model policy on sex trafficking investigations. The dates are a little bit too close considering the pandemic, and I didn't have time to change those dates. We didn't get the DE until about noon with a 5 o'clock deadline for some amendments. And so a lot of moving parts, and we're all working remotely, so we didn't have an opportunity to make those changes for the dates. Right now they were set at having that model policy completed by September 15th, 2020, and that all law enforcement agencies would have it already enacted by December 15th. I think the greater concern, I believe, in the field is really what would be the best practice for sex trafficking investigations, and that's the greater concern. There's quite a bit of contention, I guess, in the field of how that should be approached and how victims should be approached, and so we're not quite at the point where we can roll out model policy just yet. I would note, though, that when we had our hearing, Caroline Palmer from Safe Harbor came, and she did tell us that the OJP report that had just come out showed that only 17% of law enforcement agencies actually have a formal policy of how to treat the sex trafficking investigation. So it certainly is needed. The field needs a little bit more development. You can see vast differences across the state and how these policies are implemented. And obviously, they don't have model policies in many of the law enforcement agencies right now. But with that, I will withdraw it, and Representative Pinto and I will be working in the interim, and Lord willing, we'll both come back in the next after the next election and come back and work on it some more. But unfortunately, it's one of those things that COVID kind of had some impact on, and so I'll be withdrawing it now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And I do note that your House file does have bipartisan authorship on it. So I think getting to agreement would probably happen sooner than later. But obviously, we don't want to push forward legislation until it's really up to snuff. And so, so I look forward to your continued work on this. It's an awfully important direction, I believe. So very well. So I don't think we moved it. So we will not be then considering Amendment A9. And then we have Amendment A10, and I'm looking for a author of that.
Mr. Chair, the A10 is mine as well.
Very well. Representative O'Neill moves adoption of the A10 amendment to the A20 amendment. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very simply, this just requires, so we have a portion of the bill we're putting in for the Department of Corrections when it comes to drones and how they're managed, making it illegal to fly them over a corrections facility. And this would just clarify that that the consent of the commissioner must be in writing, so there's no confusion. And that's simply what it does.
Very well. Members, any questions? I did have a conversation earlier with DLC about this, and they seem to be fine with it. We do have, I think we have someone within the department in the waiting room, and if they wish to speak to it, certainly would entertain your speaking to it at this point. Okay, I'm not seeing that at this point, and I don't see any questions popping up. So, Representative Johnson, voice vote
would be fine. I think it's a good amendment.
Okay, very well. And this time, Representative Evelson, I believe the voice vote is fine. So, all in favor of adoption of the A10 amendment, the A20 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Very well, motion is adopted. The A10 amendment is adopted. Motion prevails. The A10 amendment is adopted. With that, members, I don't see any other amendments that were posted. And so we now have the A20-0767 amendment before us as amended. We do have, I believe we do have folks that that want to speak to the amendment itself. And so it'd be good to get public testimony and then obviously to see if any members wish to comment any further. I think we may have a commissioner or two lurking around our committee. There are probation provisions in the appropriations section of the amendment. That language was originally in 4540 of the DLC. I really wanted our next bill to focus on the deficiency funding, so it would certainly be appropriate to have a conversation about the probation provisions. And so I guess I'm looking for a volunteer and from the DLC. I can't see the waiting room, so I don't know who's in there.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Schnell's here.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. So I can walk through a little bit of what this this provision really includes.
Okay.
When we look at the supervision, we, as you know, and I think was when they were providing some of the background on the bill itself, this is there is a lot going on here. What this does is it increases funding for Community Corrections Act counties as well as the CPO counties. It also adds dollars in for, we've been focusing a tremendous amount of effort on trying to address the needs. I think this really goes back to some of the work that was done by Representative Neal in Anoka County, a project around the management of folks who were engaged in technical violation and trying to address issues that people may have had in the community where they can be most effectively addressed. As we've talked about before, oftentimes when we bring people back on violations, they are simply housed, and I described it before as really warehousing of these offenders when they're brought back for sanctioning time, and we're not addressing those underlying issues. What this does is it puts more emphasis into community supervision and the work around that, and then establishes these revocation or intervention centers that allows for agents to be able to send people or engage people in services that can be provided on a regional level. And we would be working across the state to establish these with both in communities that are DOC supervision as well as CCA supervision. And ultimately, we'd be looking at providing community-based treatment programs, providing access to help finding housing alternatives, cognitive behavioral treatment, which we know is an evidence-based practice. And what we believe in working with and working with all of the CCA counties and all the partners, this really, we believe, creates a system. And that has been really our focus is trying to create a more integrated system of how do we best and most effectively intervene in the underlying issues that the people who are in the criminal justice system face. And so I'm really proud of the fact that in partnership with CCA and the CPO directors and organizations, we were able to put this together that ultimately helps lift up and provide base level funding for those counties who are CPO and CCA, and allows us to put together packages to be able to address the needs of people going forward. This has been an area of significant importance. I see that there are some testifiers later on related to this, but you know, this is important for the county, our county partners. And when we look at our population in the correctional facilities, there has been a reduction in population overall. And a lot of that is really due to the supervision strategies that have been employed by both the CCA counties as well as the DOC agents across our state. And I think the other thing that's really important to recognize is that there is also a reduction in some of the funding that that is being requested on the facility side. So I think it was talked about earlier, I think John had mentioned a little bit of some of that offset. There was some offset dollars, $2.54 million. I may be off a little bit on that. There's a reduction on the facility side to offset some of the changes from the incarceration costs. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd stand for any questions if there are any.
Very well. I do see people from MACPAL and the CAC here, and so maybe we can hear from them. If you can stick around and see if there are any other questions of the three of you. There may also be some other advocates who want to speak to this. But if I see the name Terry Fawcett from MACPAL.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon.
Very well. Thank you. Welcome to the city.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Probation Officers. I'm Terry Fawcett, the president. In addition to a letter that the committee received in advance of this meeting, many CPO directors have also reached out to many of you individually. I'd also like to thank the Commissioner of Corrections for the leadership in guiding the delivery systems, as well as MICA and AMC to unify budget requests for the good of corrections. One corrections rather than a good for any delivery system. This collaboration is important now more than ever before during this pandemic. The pandemic has only reinforced how important the work of probation and parole agents in our respective communities are. Pine County, for example, lost a client to suicide recently. Our clients need us, and the community depends on us to not only assist with public safety, but to be the change agents that we strive to be. Sometimes probation officers and social workers are the only support that they have. The CPO delivery system by statute calls for 50% reimbursement back to the counties, which hasn't happened since 1996. Now that COVID-19 has emerged, business has changed locally, such as reduction in jail intakes, more sanctioning agreements, which has expanded use of probation tools, as well as early release of offenders in our communities. MACPAL has offered support to the commissioner and the supervision of these offenders if needed. There are probation innovations being done under COVID-19, such as assisting schools to organize their lunch distribution, delivering educational supplies to students, assisting with food prep for the homeless, making cloth face masks, weekly DWI court quarantine challenges with clients similar to bingo, where if they're taking care of themselves and doing self-care activities such as walks and reading the book, and they get incentives for their work. This is the new norm, or the norm for the foreseeable future, and we're slowly rolling out our new work plans. CPO agents, as a reminder, supervise high-risk clients on pretrial, high-risk juvenile offenders, as well as most of the domestic violence and repeat DWI offenders. These offense types continue to be at risk to themselves and our communities. It's important, more now than ever, to show the support to our agents and show that they are valued. In conclusion, on behalf of MACPO, I am thankful for the partnership and support from AMC, MICA, the DOC, and MACAC to testify here today in a unified front. This may be the first time that this has happened to this extent. As we continue dealing with the impact of this pandemic, decisions made at the local and state level are critically important. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Fawcett. I think you laid out a very concise, compelling, painted a very concise and compelling picture of both the overall need, but specifically the need in this COVID time. We also have Mitch Christensen from MACAC.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. Thanks so much for allowing me to provide some additional brief testimony. I am Mitch Christensen. I'm the chair for the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections at Counties. I'm also the director for Six West Community Corrections out in Montevideo, Minnesota. As you know, because you have taken some time to attend some of our forums this year and allow testimony in other ways, we are your community safety provider. We aren't as visible as law enforcement. We don't carry guns. We're not the judges in the black robes, but we are the backbone of the criminal justice system in Minnesota. Terry touched on some of the things that we're doing in this role, but additionally, we're writing the pre-sentence investigations on felony offenders. We're doing those guidelines calculations. We're the ones that are collecting DNA for the predatory offender registration database. We're actually doing the registration. So all of those other systems that you're funding, like guidelines and BCA, et cetera, are pieces of that work are flowing through us as well. We're also delivering individual client interventions to help them learn new skills, adopt new ways of thinking. We're the ones that are driving motivation in them to change and instilling hope in them that they can change. And we're also switching it up to those phone calls we get at 2 a.m. from law enforcement, because one of our clients who has mental health issues and is drinking has barricaded himself in his house, and we're trying to figure out how to keep everybody safe. So it's a wide range of tasks, but it's also a wide range of skills that we need our agents to be able to possess in order to do this effectively. So we can't do any of that without adequate ongoing funding for public safety. Increasingly, the state and our communities are asking us and expecting us to do more, like expand our roles in specialty courts, develop alternatives to juvenile incarceration, respond to the COVID pandemic, as Terry mentioned, and maintain public safety, providing a solution to prison overcrowding, as the commissioner mentioned. And also just safely maintaining clients who have increasing higher risks and higher needs, and figuring out ways to do that that are evidence-based. So these are all important, and they're even urgent needs that impact the entire state of Minnesota. And we want to be able to provide effective supervision and viable solutions to these challenges that are facing the criminal justice system. But we can't deliver those outcomes that you as a state want if we don't have sufficient funding. So a specific example, the 34 Community Corrections Act counties provide supervision for over 70% of all the offenders in Minnesota. And that includes the bulk of felony probationers and supervised releasees coming out of prison. So any measures that are undertaken in the state to reduce the spread of COVID in the institutions through early release of prisoners is going to directly impact our Community Corrections Act counties, because we're supervising the bulk of those folks. So obviously the cost of doing this work on behalf of the state, it goes up every year. We've seen an average of about a 4% increase per year in the last 10 years in our operating expense, but our funding from the state has only increased less than 1% in each of those years. So without an operating increase in state funding to the Community Corrections Act subsidy that's contained in this bill, the supervision offenders at the local level, so that backbone of the criminal justice system that I mentioned in the beginning, it's in really big trouble if we don't get some funding. To solely fund the State Department of Corrections operating deficiency for their field services unit that the commissioner mentioned, but to not fund the partner Community Corrections Act agencies that do the bulk of the work would actually, in my opinion, be unconscionable, because we're doing the majority of the work for those felony offenders, and the counties have really been picking up the ball in carrying that supervision cost. And the disparity is becoming so great that counties are really struggling. And as you know, counties are going to be increasingly facing all kinds of other funding demands due to the COVID pandemic. So in summary, I would just like to say that the MACAC organization strongly recommends approval of this increase to the Community Corrections Act subsidy that's contained in the governor's budget. We do greatly appreciate the support of Commissioner Schnell and the department. He has been a very good partner to us. We've been in close communication with him, and we greatly appreciate that support. So thank you, and if there are any questions, please let me know.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. And thank you for the work that you do and that MACAC does. I like that, I don't know if I like it, but I thought it's an apt picture of this invisible backbone of our public safety system functioning across our state. So with that, members, we do have two other testifiers on the proposal before us. I'm going to ask them to please keep it brief. I still want to get to any committee member comments, a vote, and then we still want to do the DLC provision. And I'm told we have until 2:20, not 2:30. So with that, we have Lindsay Bryce with Minkaza and Katie Kramer from Violence Free Minnesota. We'll take them in that order. Ms. Bryce.
Thank you, Chair. Chair members, thank you for having me here today. I'm Lindsay Bryce. I'm the Law and Policy Director for the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And I just have a really, I'll be very brief. I know that you're in a hurry. MnCASA has been working on sexual assault kit reform with the House, the Senate, and the Governor's Office. We greatly appreciate everyone's support. MnCASA's legislative priorities are and continue to be the centralized storage and tracking of sexual assault kits. This centralized storage and tracking will support survivors and will provide Minnesota with significant information about what kits are not currently being tested. We appreciate that the bill heard today recognizes both the current funding realities as well as the critical need to continue supporting victims and survivors of sexual assault. So thank you very much, and thanks for having me here today.
Thank you, Ms. Bryce. Thank you for your work, particularly on this issue. We found some pretty good bipartisan common ground to do this, including members on our committee, but beyond that as well. The thought I have is that, I get it with COVID, absolutely, on the budget. But people are being victimized. We've had a failed system in terms of delivering justice for them, which in my mind means that it's a signal to violators to violate. And there is no time for us to stop and pretend that we can't address that issue. We just have to find a way. So thank you for that. Katie Kramer from Violence Free Minnesota. And if you two can be just as brief, I'd be great.
Happy to be brief. Chair Mariani, members of the committee, I'm Katie Kramer, Policy Director for Violence Free Minnesota, the Coalition to End Relationship Abuse. I want to start by thanking you and letting you know that we appreciate everything that all of you are doing during the COVID-19 pandemic. Placing victim and public safety as a top priority, including funding programs like sexual assault kit storage, tracking, and testing, even during an economic crisis and downturn in the economy, reflects our desired and shared outcomes for Minnesota. Violence Free Minnesota has testified previously in support around many of the provisions in this public safety and criminal justice reform omnibus bill. We support the revised harassment and stalking provision and several other policy provisions that we won't cover again. But thank you very much for the opportunity to voice our support for this bill, and I'd be happy to try and address any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. I appreciate your brevity and your work as well, the work of Violence Free Minnesota. Members, that's all we have in terms of testifiers who have cited to testify for the provision before us. Are there any comments from committee members? Representative O'Neill and Representative Johnson. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am very appreciative that both the harassment language and the amendment that Representative Pinto and I worked on together are in the bill. I know it's also a standalone and moving forward on its own, which is great. I'm also very appreciative that sexual assault language or rape kit language is in here, just as the other two testifiers had just said. My concern is the budget. And like I had said previously, we look at the current deficit that we just found out about and all the budget reserves. And if we put them all in, we're still $67 million short. And of course, Commissioner France has urged us not to use all the budget reserves to make up for the deficit. So I'm just at a loss as to how we can afford to spend more when we're actually already short. So I'm hoping, Chair, that maybe you've got some brilliant ideas, or if your leadership has got some ideas of how we can afford to spend this, I'm all ears. But short of that, I don't know how we afford to do this moving forward as important.
Thank you. Duly noted. Representative Johnson, and then Representative Howard.
Chair Mariani, members, I'm in the same category as Representative O'Neill. We just had the revised budget forecast, and it did not look good. With a change of $4 billion. And if we wipe out our total reserves, we still do not have enough funds on hand. There's a lot of good things in this bill I support. A couple I'm neutral on. Some of the spending I think we need to do, but we don't have the funds to do it. But we have some good policies issues in here that I would like to see move forward. I'd love to be able to do some of this spending. I think it's worthwhile. But we probably need, in the state budget, need to find a place to cut probably $1 billion so we don't wipe out our reserves between now and the end of the year, end of this fiscal year. So with that, overall, it's not a bad bill. I think some of the spending's in very good wise place. Some of it I question, but overall, it's not bad. But unfortunately, we don't have the money to spend. So because there's appropriations here with the COVID-19 situation in and the state of the economy right now, I'm going to have to vote no.
Very well. We have Representative Nash and then Representative Dean. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just echo the comments that were just expressed. You know, I would say that all of us were expecting what the forecast was about to say. And to move forward on something that really doesn't honor or reflect the change that we've had as a state financially, I find a little troubling. And while there are things in here that I think are things that we should really be moving, the spending parts of this bill, I think we're essentially at being asked to vote on something that we have no real understanding how it's going to get paid for. You know, and that's sort of like walking into a car dealership and saying, oh, I want the best car you've got. I want, because I want to do good things for my family and transport them from place to place and do all the things that we all want, but you simply can't afford it. And that is the tough question. That's where the leadership comes in. That's where you stand up and you say, all of these are good things, but we can't afford all of these things. Game has certainly changed since we started session and this bill began getting built with bills that were being heard over time. So, Mr. Chair, I just think that it is it's troublesome that we're going to move these provisions forward, because I don't know that, I guess I would ask you, Mr. Chair, do you know how this is going to be paid for?
Representative Nash, that is a very tough conversation that we're going to be having at the next stage of the game. As I said when we started, without a target, without a budget resolution to work from, what we're left in this committee is to speak to what the basic needs are in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, I love your analogy of the car, but, you know, we're not talking about the car here. We're talking about, you know, a good lock system, you know, good tires, a good kind of basic stuff. And I don't know the answer to that. I think we're going to have to struggle with that all together. At the same time, I don't want to ignore the fact that we're going to need a probation system in order to make our correction system more affordable in the near, in the intermediate to long term, folks who have been violated sexually actually honestly get a chance for justice, and that violators and given a free pass because you know, we're struggling with the budget. I don't think you want that either. I know you don't. So all I can do at this point is speak to it, keep this issue alive. Otherwise, this committee shuts down. And as our leadership struggles with the budget decisions, these issues are not going to be on the table. So that's my intent today. And honestly, I look forward to, rolling up my sleeves along with you and others to figure out the answer to your important question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And not to belabor the point, I just think that the policy initiatives in here, the standalone policy, only policy, I think that's a good thing to have had a discussion over. And I think it would be prudent, or it would have been prudent, to have divided the fiscal parts out, but you know, that's your purview as chair, and I will just be done now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Howard, I jumped there over you. I apologize. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you for bringing the bill forward and share a different perspective than some of my colleagues have been offering. I reviewed the budget news yesterday and was glad to see that we're in a strong position to move forward. And, you know, I frankly don't believe that we should curl up in the fetal position because we have a budget shortfall. We have a strong budget reserve that we've built over many years. We have over $2 billion in federal resources and probably more coming our way. We should do that and continue to advocate for more. The best thing that we can do to help Minnesota recover is to invest in the economic security of our people and to not retreat. And this bill includes important provisions that we need to move forward. And we do have the means to move forward and represent our people. And now isn't the time to curl up in the fetal position. Now is the time to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Holland. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howard covered a few of the things that I wanted to speak to. I'd also like to speak that there are provisions within this bill that actually save money. And to pass up on something that will have a cost savings to the state, I think, is a little bit irresponsible. And when we think about the cost to the counties, and the supervision of those individuals, I mean, really what we're doing is we're just kicking the expense and the cost of what we're asking them to do. In some ways, we're probably telling them what to do. We're kicking it down to them, and I think that's irresponsible to the people of the state of Minnesota and the counties that are working so hard to make sure that our communities stay safe. So I think that, we do have that federal money, and I think some of these provisions within this bill will be eligible to use some of the Federal CARES Act money. And so I think that it's important that we move forward with this. Would it be much better if we were staring at a $2 billion surplus? Absolutely it would. But at the same time, we need to do what's right. And I think that this is one of the times where we need to do what's right.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Dean. Members, you certainly have my commitment as chair of this committee to fight like hell for whatever we're going to be able to do. You know, we most likely are going to spend some of that rainy day fund. I agree, I don't think we should spend all of it. I think Mr. France is absolutely correct about that. But you can bet that other committees are going to be fighting like hell for pieces. I certainly intend to do that because I do believe that public safety is a core function of our duties and our responsibilities here. And I don't want our voice to be missing when we have a very difficult discussion over the course of the next days and weeks. So members, with that, the chair renews his motion that the amendment 820-0767 as amended be adopted to the 2711 House file. And I'm going to ask the clerk to take the roll.
Mariani?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Christensen? Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Lesh?
Aye.
Long?
Yes.
Lucero? Lucero? And you're muted, but Miller?
No.
Moeller?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Novotny?
No.
O'Neill?
Sadly, no.
Pinto?
Aye.
Tolston?
No.
Lucero? Lucero? Ten ayes, six noes, and then one absent excused.
Very well. It's a count I have as well. So the motion does prevail. And House File 2711 is amended with the A 20-0767 amendment. And now, members, the chair moves that House File 2711, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and the clerk will take the roll.
Mariani?
Aye.
Edelson?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Considine?
Aye.
Dean?
Aye.
Howard?
Yes.
Lesh?
Aye.
Long?
Aye.
Lucero? Lucero? Miller?
No.
Moeller?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Novotny?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
O'Neill?
Sorry, no.
Pinto?
Aye.
Holston?
No.
Lucero? Lucero? Ten ayes, six noes, one absent excused again.
Very well, I have the same count. And so with that, the motion does prevail. And members, House File 2711 as amended is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, members, for the tough on this issue. At this point now, we're going to switch over to 4540. The chair moves House File 4540 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The chair also moves the A4 amendment, which essentially removes all the language from 4540, with the exception of the DLC deficiency request. So members, that's the motion before us. And I'm going to ask staff, most likely Mr. Walls, and I don't think we'll take but a second to describe the provisions in the A4 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this is Ben Johnson with House Research.
Very well, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I believe you essentially summarized what this bill, what the amendment does. It removes everything that is in the bill other than the supplemental funding request from the Department of Corrections requested to pay for the employee contracts that they negotiated. That's all you're on.
Very well, members. And I think someone asked a question earlier, might have been Representative O'Neill, that some of the provisions that we took out some of them are found in the 2711, so the sexual assault kits, for instance. And then all the judiciary provisions are in the purview of Representative of Chair Lesh in his committee. We do have testifiers to this, and I believe it's appropriate to begin with the commissioner, with Commissioner Schnell.
Good afternoon, Chair. Again, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to this. Before you, and this is really a deficiency request and some overtime compensation that we are looking to get to address issues around overtime costs that we have sustained, as well as to look at cover the cost of the contract. As you know, we spent a lot of time during the last session looking at trying to obtain funds to bring up and address compensation issues related to correctional officer recruitment and retention, and you were fortunate enough to provide us with some resources for that. Those dollars went toward ultimately crafting a package that would ultimately increase the wages for starting, because as you will recall, the DOC was really profoundly outside of really the market norms for starting pay. And still, while still we are considerably behind as many of the counties. For instance, in some cases, some counties right now in hiring correctional officers at $23 an hour, the present starting wage at the DOC is $20.55. That said, we went from $17, $17.90 an hour to up to $20.55, and it has made a real difference. When we begin to look at what has happened with hiring since February of this year, we've hired 97 new officers. And when we compare that to the same period last year, we hired 49. So I think it does provide some indication that this salary increase did in fact make a difference. And I know that hiring has been a major concern for the committee, as well has been an area of considerable focus for the department. And I just want to really say that despite the challenges we face right now with the COVID environment, I will tell you that we have taken advantage of this time. We've brought on a number of new officers. I think I spoke earlier. We have more than 20 officers that are going to be starting that have come in through the academy process at Stillwater alone, within the past 2 months. So it's really, I think, a remarkable time for us. We've hired 198 new officers since July 1st of last year, and so really in this fiscal year, there's been incredible effort put toward hiring of correctional officers and building up the safety and security of our facilities. I would simply add also that, you know, this is interesting. We're having this conversation during this particular week. This is this happens to be correctional employees week across our country, and so I want to give a shout out to the men and women who serve in these really critical public safety roles that are oftentimes not thought about. And frankly, you know, we prefer in many cases for our communities to not have to think about the safety and security issues that can be created. And our corrections professionals do that and do that, I think, with tremendous honor. And I'm really proud of the fact that despite the challenges that happen normally working in corrections, whether it's in our facilities or in community services during this COVID environment, I am so immensely proud of the work that our people have done. I can't speak to it. I can tell you that up at Moose Lake, where we, as you all know, we've had COVID hotspots. There are officers there. We have, you know, more than 40 officers that have contracted COVID in that facility. 100 of the incarcerated people there have contracted COVID, and we're turning the corner there, where now we can see the number of people who have recovered outnumber the number of people who actively have COVID. But these corrections personnel, whether they're case managers or even our facility maintenance personnel, our educators, our nurses, our corrections officers, they show up. They go into those environments despite them being high levels of viral load, and serve the people that are incarcerated in our facilities well, and they really serve ultimately the safety interest of our state. And I'm happy to report, as many of you know, that we did have an officer, an officer who required mechanical ventilation because of COVID. And I am really pleased to report that just in the past several days, he came off of the ventilator and is breathing on his own. He still has a road of recovery. But I point this out because I do think it speaks to the nature of the work, whether it's in our facilities or in field services, and ultimately making sure that our workforce is funded in such a way that we can move forward, I think, a critical public safety objective. That's what's in front of you. I can speak to individual lines if there are questions. Ultimately, what this does is address the employee compensation and overtime needs for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. With that, Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I think you've done some projections on what might happen if there is no funding coming forward. As you know, we're going to be wrestling with that, you know, at the next stage, of our legislative process here. And I do, by the way, think that wrestling probably will not give us a result. It's going to take quite a bit of wrestling. It's going to take a little bit of time for us to figure this out if we can. But my understanding is that without the deficiency, you're looking at, a pretty scary FDE situation at collection.
Mr. Chair, I can just speak briefly to that. You know, I put this in some context. We know that there's no doubt that the Department of Corrections is going to face difficult economic challenges, even if this request is approved. And I can explain that in a second. But this request is really the equivalent of if this does not get funded, we would be in a position where we would be cutting 125 FTEs across the Department of Corrections. Because that's really what's at stake here is 125 full-time positions. And on top of that, I just want to talk a little bit about what COVID has done in particular. First of all, I think the situation with Officers Gamm and Parisi and the impact that had on the MinCor, the correctional industries, the work sites that people in our facilities are engaged in a variety of different work activities. But in addition to just MinCor itself, which as you know, is not funded through the general fund, it is required statutorily to be self-sufficient. That program has faced some challenges that we were in the process of really developing. We developed a recovery plan. And as we were implementing that recovery plan, of course, COVID comes to the doorstep, and we are going to face some significant and profound challenges. Now, MinCorp must cover its own costs, but I would also just mention, and some of you may recall this from previous conversations we've had, that MinCorp also covers about $3.2 million in other costs, mostly personnel costs related to reentry and education. And that was those dollars were used in that manner because there had been a long historical record of MinCorp producing the kinds of revenues to build into the base those positions to provide services to our clients. So MinCorp wasn't just about providing individual work opportunities for people in our facilities. MinCorp actually provided funding to do a variety of other activities, including a host of reentry services and education. That is not included in this, and it's not part of the ask. It is a challenge that as a department, we are going to have to work through with our collective bargaining units and come up with a plan. We are actively involved in that. We are looking at all ways that we as an agency can look at reductions and certain costs without impacting fundamentally the services that we provide that we think are essential. And lastly, I would just say that you know, one of the things unique, I think, about the DOC is we're the third largest state agency by way of employees. And beyond that, I would also say that you know, as we look at the role our agency plays, and you know, and we look at the economic situation we find ourselves in today, we do believe that providing for and ensuring good public safety in our facilities and the good supervision in the communities across the state is essential and part and parcel to the fundamental obligation of government. And I think when we put this in context, while I understand that we will face difficult challenges and we as an agency and the governor has asked us to, and we will step up and make difficult choices as we go forward. We're going to have to, even if this supplemental budget request is approved. And so I just want you to know that we are committed to doing what we need to do to provide the essential services, number one. But number two, we recognize the reality of the economic circumstances that the state faces. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any additional question.
Thank you, Commissioner. I do know that I learned today that you're most like facility is down 50 COs due to COVID right now, so it's not getting any better. Members, Representative Lozero has communicated with us that we were not registering this vote. I imagine technology got in the way. This happened the other day, Chair Elections Committee as well. So after this vote, I'm going to move that we record Representative Lozero's no vote. So that's how we handled the judiciary. So help me remember that. And obviously, we want to get there. In order to do that. We do, Commissioner, we do have a question from Representative Jones.
Chair Mariani, Commissioner. One thing I'm wondering, when you submitted your supplemental budget, that was before this dreaded COVID-19 issue affected our state and really became known. I'm just wondering, have you re-evaluated your request, especially with the economics issues that we're having now? We're looking like the state probably has to cut $1 billion, and that's just to keep the reserve. If we don't do any cuts, we're 65 plus million in the hole as a state before we even, without spending another dime. So I'm just wondering if you've re-evaluated what you absolutely need. And I'm talking down to the bare bones, because it's right now it doesn't look good, and just wondering your thoughts on that.
And Commissioner, we only have a few minutes left, so
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, thank you for that. I will say that when we went into this, the collective bargaining units bargained in good faith. The CER did not take action on those. Those contracts went into effect, contracts become, I think, critically important. They provide essential services. I recognize the impact, but I think as was commented, I think maybe by the governor, you know, that when we look at the cost of employment, now I don't want to minimize the real impact to our state, but as was pointed out, you know, we are as a state, despite the really hard challenges that we will face, I think in a pretty good place. And the last thing I think that we want to do is compromise the safety of our facilities, the safety of our state, by making cuts in places that are going to result in very real impact and harm potentially to our communities. In addition, I think overall across the state enterprise as a whole, really 7% of the state's budget is focused on on state employees. And so, you know, while that's still a large number, as reflected in even in our requests, I would say that we have thought about that. In addition to that, I would say that this is I just want to point out, because I want to take some credit for what our agency and the work our finance folks and our facility folks and people who did a lot of this budget planning. It's not very oftentimes that you're going to see offsets in a budget where we came in saying that we want to make this investment in community supervision, and while it's not a dollar for dollar offset, because it simply can't be, doesn't equate that way, but $2.469 million reduction on the facility side is truly an investment. It's not, it doesn't offset this by any stretch of the imagination. But I want to point that out, because I think we went into this knowing that we wanted to show that there was a benefit coming to the types of investments that are being made. And I think that this is a preliminary investment, and I think we'll see what comes of this over as we step out of COVID and into the new normal going forward. But I think that there is opportunity, and I would just hate for us to cut short what those opportunities are, and certainly not at the expense of public safety.
Members, we're about to be cut off here. We're good to get this vote and get Lucero's vote in. I do see Representative Botney has a question. We can risk running out of time here. Wondering if Representative Johnson, you can yield to the Botney and make sure that your colleague gets his question or comment in on time.
Chair Mariani, I will yield at this time.
Thank you. Representative Novotny, and again, they may pull the switch on us here. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Commissioner Schnell, you recorded in a recent Minnesota Lawyer article that you believe that the current 90-day release authority statute gives you enough and you do not need the additional authority that Ombudsman for Corrections Mark Hassie has proposed. Can you expound on that quickly?
Well, I think right now, Representative Novotny has said that we started out by looking at the 90 days. Certainly statutory authority is far greater than 90 days. Statutory authority presently would be for work release is as much as 50%. After a person has done 50% of service, they could become eligible. That is in statute. Now, we started at 90 days, and depending upon what our facilities need by way of capacity in order to manage COVID spread inside the facilities and not overwhelm. And I think this is really critical. We do not want to overwhelm local healthcare facilities, because we saw up in Moose Lake, there was great concern by the community up north that was concerned that sickness becoming overwhelming in our facilities could overwhelm the community healthcare system. So we take this responsibility of managing COVID very seriously and creating the mechanisms to be able to have capacity to move people around for quarantine, isolation, and containment becomes so critical. And as we go forward, we're gonna see and we continue to evaluate what the warden's needs are in order to accommodate outbreaks as we anticipate and expect they're gonna happen going forward.
Commissioner, I'm going to stop us there. Representative Johnson, out of respect for you, very quickly, and then we're going to take a vote because really we're about to run out of time. Representative Johnson?
Chair Mariani, members, Commissioner, I understand the needs that you have. Unfortunately, at this time, the guards and the staff that you have is fabulous. They do a fantastic job. Right now, I'm going to have to vote no on this. Like I said, we have to find a place to cut probably $1 billion out of our state budget. And I know that we will be coming back into special session. Maybe at that time we can find an opportunity to find some place to make up this deficit. But until we find some issues, like I say, we have to cut probably $1 billion out of our current budget before we can add anything else. And like I say, I appreciate the stuff your staff is doing. They've been fabulous. And my prayers are for all the staff that you have and the guards that work with these inmates.
Amen, Representative Johnson. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 4540 be amended with the A4 amendment. The clerk will take the roll on that motion.
Liani?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Johnson?
Hello.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Voting yes with COs.
Howard?
Yes.
Lesh?
Aye.
Long?
Aye.
Lucero?
No.
Miller?
No.
Moeller?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Novotny?
No.
O'Neill?
No money, no.
Central?
Aye.
Polson?
No.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, nine,
10, 7, 10, 7. Very well. Out of vote 10 to 7, the motion prevails and House File 4540 is amended. The chair moves that House File 4540 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Mariani?
Yes.
Edelson?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Christensen?
Yes.
Considine?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Lush?
Aye.
Long?
Aye.
Lucero?
No.
Miller?
No.
Moeller?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Novotny?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pinto?
Aye.
Polson?
No.
10-7.
Very well. House file, motion does prevail, and House File 4540, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Ways. It means Representative Johnson moves that the a vote of Representative Lucero on House File 2711 as amended be recorded in our minutes as a no vote. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 All same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Members, that's our business for today. We may well meet again. There is certainly a lot of work for us to do. If we're in special, hopefully we can do that work. You know, the public safety corrections needs of our state are important. And as long as there's an opportunity for us to do that, then I think we should grasp it together. Hopefully we can do it in a good, strong, bipartisan way. But with that, members, I want to thank you for today's debate, for your patience, and for bringing your whole selves to this committee meeting. It's been, again, my pleasure and privilege to provide chairmanship for all of you. And so with that, until further notice, I suppose this committee is adjourned. Thank you.